top of the table, that's exciting. Bottom of the table, that's exciting. Like, that's the sort of football that you want to be. And these are the pressure games that in 15, 20 years' time, I will look back on and I will remember these are the important matches for me, not the middle of the table teams.
Subscribe to the Koi Gig podcast stream on the OTB Sports app now.
OTB AM. With Gillette, put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
So the Rams beat the Bengals 23-20 in Los Angeles at home, SoFi Stadium, to win the Super Bowl last night. I'm delighted to say, Mike Carlson, I say last night, it was the early hours of this morning, Mike. So I suspect you're a little bit bleary-eyed, but what was your experience of it like? How was it?
Yeah, well, and a happy Valentine's Day to you too.
Happy
I thought it was it was the kind of messy game. And one that was defined almost more by mistakes than anything else, but it kind of became what we thought it would be in the fourth quarter, which was very exciting and very good. The Rams defense, especially their defensive line, which we expected would dominate the game, dominated at least in the run game most of the time. But it was the Bengals defensive line that actually played better until we got into those passing situations and the Rams started to get the sacks. And the big problem, I think, for the Rams was the injury to Odell Beckham, which left them without enough options because Cooper Kupp was being double covered most of the time. Stafford tried other receivers. Most of them let him down. And in the end, he had to just forced the ball into Cooper Kupp, which was not a bad strategy because it worked.
Particularly in that last drive where he only had eyes like a Valentine for Cooper Kupp, and that did work again and again and again and again and again and again.
Yeah, and you know, and that's the case for Kupp as the regular season MVP got made a whole lot better by this game. I thought they could have easily given the game MVP to Aaron Donald because he had, especially in the fourth quarter, had a fantastic game and made the key play, really stopping Piran from getting a first down and then pressuring Burrow and nearly sacking him on the fourth down play. But I had Kupp as the MVP there and had him in the betting line as well. So I was probably influenced a little bit. And I thought that was a fair decision. I thought, you know, Matt Stafford pretty much did what Matt Stafford does. There weren't really any huge surprises in this game, except maybe Jalen Ramsey getting beaten, you know, three times, all on key plays.
One of those shouldn't have counted, all right? I mean,
well, you know, I understand that, and there's a lot of uproar about it because it was obviously a face masking penalty, but the referees were letting them play, as the saying goes, which I hate, but that's the way it was. And what the official on the sideline saw was Ramsey reaching in and grabbing Higgins, and Higgins basically pulling himself out of the grab. And because he was on the sidelines and the face masking was on the inside, he didn't see it. The only guy who could have seen it would have been the back judge at the very end of the field, and he missed it either. And in fairness, I missed it until the replay. And I think everybody did. It happened so quickly that they missed it. But if you're going to let them play, that's the kind of thing that you wind up missing. And you know, in the NBA, which is kind of the model for NFL officiating these days, in the NBA, they call a lot of fouls until the last 2 minutes and then let them play. And then in the NFL, it's the other way around. They let them play, and then all of a sudden, the last 2 minutes, they start calling a lot of fouls.
Just explain to us then, because one of the first comments that we had this morning was from somebody who was saying the pass interference call at the end, which really extends the drive and I think probably is the winning and the losing of the game. Cooper Kupp is not really held. It's the type of thing that is never really given.
I called it before they did. You know, watching it on the screen, and as soon as they said, "Oh, there's a flag," I said, "It's got to be Wilson for a hold." I didn't realize that it came late enough to me. But when you watch the replay, you clearly see him turn Cooper Kupp. So Kupp's running from right to left, and all of a sudden, his body gets turned backwards. And if that's not a hold or interference, I don't know what is. Now, in the tenor of the game, where they were letting that sort of thing go, you know, that jersey pulls, all that kind of stuff weren't being called, I can understand why you say, well, why didn't they let it go? But to me, it's a hold or it's interference. It wasn't going to complain about that. And I was also glad, you know, there was kind of a ticky tack hold on, was it the next? Yeah, it was the next play, I think, when they had the double foul, and Havenstein got called for a hold. And, you know, I said, oh, finally, because he spent the whole game against the 49ers holding and never got called once.
Was the play by Kupp throwing to Stafford in the end zone, was that a reaction to the double coverage that you're talking about on Cooper Kupp?
Yeah, I mean, what you had to do with Kupp was to get him in motion, to get him open, to beat the guy on the line of scrimmage as much as you can. And I was amazed toward the end of the game that they actually were still in zone at times against Kupp, because that's a recipe for disaster. But it was likely the last thing you would have expected. And you remember when the Eagles ran the Philly special, which was a different thing. It was a more tricky trick play. The Patriots had run that with Tom Brady trying to catch it, and Brady's old legs wouldn't get him onto the ball, you know, and running the same play back at the opposition is always a kind of good thing. So when Mixon had thrown a touchdown pass, the last thing they're expecting is for you to do the same thing. And, you know, Kupp just missed the pass, really. It was there.
What does the win of the Rams tell us about the state of the game, about Sean McVay, about how to build a roster? Because it frequently just seems to me the analogy of, like, the NFL is essentially a snow globe that has been shaken, and at the end one team wins, but it's impossible to draw too many conclusions from it.
No, I think you're right. You're right about that. You know, you can build a team the way the Rams have, but in this game, the thing that stands out to me roster building wise is that when Odell Beckham got hurt, they didn't have a second option. Van Jefferson has been a disappointment for 2 years now, I think, in terms of being that option. When Robert Woods got hurt early in the season, he couldn't step up. DeSean Jackson wasn't the answer. And I think that's what happened. You know, you have to be very good at building at stocking the back end of your roster in the NFL, especially they played 21 games this season. You know, that's a lot of punishment. You have to expect that guys are going to be injured and are going to be missing time. And, you know, and with the concussion protocol, you're going to miss, you know, you've got more of a chance of missing time. So I don't think that many teams will be in a position to be able to try to do what the Rams have done, or willing to throw away those draft picks. Now, one of the things you have to take into account is the Rams are trading these draft picks from a position of strength, record-wise, which means they're low-round draft picks anyway. But if you're a bad team and you want to build on the Rams formula, you don't really want to be trading the first or second or third pick in the draft, because odds are you're going to get an impact player in those spots, especially if you don't have to force yourself for a quarterback. You know, you could argue, you know, oh, the Bengals 2 years ago could have traded that number one pick for more picks for great players, some of that, but they wouldn't have Joe Burrow. You know, and the next year they wouldn't have Jamar Chase, and that's going to be the future of their team.
So was the sense then that the Rams really went after this year's Super Bowl, their home Super Bowl, and that to hell with next year and the year after, that there wasn't much future proofing going on here? The irony, obviously, they've got a very young head coach who's possibly going to hang around, or I'm not sure what he's going to do, but it is a sense that they went all in on this year's season.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And you know, they'll be able to keep this team more or less intact next year. I think Whitworth's retirement, and I think Beckham is a free agent, are the two big things that they have to cope with. But otherwise, they can keep this team more or less intact. And there's also the factor that Beckham, and to an extent Von Miller, Beckham was an injury replacement. You know, they had to go out and find someone to replace Robert Woods. Von Miller was a late addition because they just needed another rusher. And yeah, it worked. How much, you know, a full season next year, if Von Miller were to stay with the Rams, a full season of an aging pass rusher, you're not going to get back that value that you might have got otherwise, you know, unless you start to rest him, which is pretty much what Denver had decided when they let him go.
Yeah, and like it was all worth it. You know, if next season they go 1-16, no one cares because they're a Super Bowl team, really.
No, that's absolutely true. You know, and last year everyone was saying, you know, Bruce Arians, no risk it, no biscuit. But that's exactly what the Rams did. They got their prize, and you know, you can't see that team collapsing, although they're in a very difficult division. But, you know, so next year they might wind up being a 10-7 kind of team, but they have the Super Bowl in 2022 to look back on.
Yeah, I had not heard a single whisper about this beforehand, but The Athletic were writing about potentially Aaron Donald walking away into the sunset having won the Super Bowl. Now, he was like pointing at the ring when there was still 30 seconds left, running around the pitch last night. Didn't strike me as a man who was going to say, yeah, okay, I've had enough. But in the aftermath, he wasn't immediately saying, oh no, absolutely, I'm coming straight back. He was like, I'm just going to live in the moment and celebrate. So there is a scenario where he goes, where McVay says, I'll just take the $10 million a year from ESPN to do Monday Night Football. I'll have no work to do apart from watching football for a couple of years and do the John Gruden thing. Is there any scenario where this happens?
Donald, as you say, it only came up over the weekend, the first suggestions of this. And he doesn't have much left to achieve, although he's still, you know, he's still relatively young. And for him, I think there was a big personal thing in this game because he blamed himself in a lot of ways for the Patriots beating the Rams 13-3 4 years ago, because basically he was single blocked that whole game. And if you can get away with single blocking Aaron Donald, that's a great recipe for beating the Rams. McVay, I think, it's funny because Zach Taylor's the guy who coached under Gruden. He's like almost like a Gruden family member. He coached, he started with John Gruden and he coached under Jay Gruden. You know, he'd be the guy you'd think would go on. And McVay, I think McVay keeps coaching, to be honest. Although, you know, somehow he managed to not burn any other timeouts after the first half, which was a huge accomplishment for him. And yeah, I just think he makes things so much more difficult than they need to be. Although Cincinnati, give them full credit, they just wouldn't let the Rams run, which we kind of thought they would do. You know, we really thought they would pound the ball and then work to make the Bengals get out of a too deep shell of defense, and they were never able to do that. You know, which, and then losing Beckham, that just made their offense really stall. And so you got to give them a lot of credit for finally figuring out a way, you know, to get through that, even if that way is just like, okay, we give it, Matt, you're going to pump the ball to Cooper Kupp, and that's it. We're going to let our best player make the plays.
So gut instinct, both Donald and McVay are back, or McVay definitely, Donald?
I think McVay, I would put McVay at 90%, and Donald, I don't know. I don't know well enough, but, you know, from what you read, you'd have to say he's kind of in the sort of 60-40 range. You know, right now he might be thinking he's done everything he needs to do, and then, you know, come May or so, he starts to think, well, maybe I'd like to play football again for another year.
Yeah. I mean, just to put in context for people who are maybe casual or enough fans, there's a possibility that he'll get spoken about. He will definitely get spoken about as one of the greatest players of all time. But when they come to speak about defensive players, he'll be right up there. And some people will say that he is as good a player as has ever played the game.
Yeah, I mean, he's, in terms of defensive linemen, there are guys who've been like him. Warren Sapp in alternate years when he wasn't overweight played a lot like Aaron Donald did. John Randall on the Minnesota Vikings was a bit smaller but quicker. Those are the two guys who really, you know, jump out at me. But he's certainly been the best defensive player in the league for a number of years, which is nowadays kind of unusual for a defensive tackle to get that. You know, you don't get the sack count that attracts the attention, but any tackle who gets, you know, over 12 sacks in a season, say, you know, is absolutely playing fantastic. And he's with the greats. I mean, you know, any discussion of the greatest defensive players begins and ends with Lawrence Taylor. But Donald is certainly up there, I think, in the top group of defensive tackles of all time, and probably the one who you could say, if you wanted to use him in the kind of defense that requires him to two gap, to control two blockers, he's great. And if you want to use him in the kind of defense that requires him to just beat a blocker or a double team and penetrate, he's great. And there aren't that many guys you can say that about.
Are the Bengals here for the long haul because Joe Burrow is a sensation, or is this one of those teams who reaches the Super Bowl and then we don't really see that much of them for a couple of years?
Well, they got lucky this year in the sense that Cleveland and Baltimore were both riddled with injuries and weren't the teams that we expected them to be at the start of the season. And so and Pittsburgh, of course, were, you know, running on seeds and stems with Ben Roethlisberger. So that's always going to be a difficult division for them to get out of. But I expect that they will be a better team on paper, at least, next season, because they're going to bring in, you assume, a little bit of offensive line help, which will make Burrow a better player. And they're pretty solid on the defensive side, you know, which we saw in this game. They brought in a lot of defensive backs this year, and they, some of them were free agents for a reason, like Eli Apple, who made a couple of great plays and had a couple of bad plays, which is the story of his career. So, you know, I think that they've got potential to be bigger. There's a lot of talk always about Super Bowl letdown, how the losing team in the Super Bowl always seems to come back with a bad season in the face of that. But, you know, I think they're kind of a level-headed team, and Zach Taylor is kind of keeps them on an even keel. So yeah, I would expect them to get better, but I think they'll have a tougher time just getting into the playoffs.
Before we let you go, Mike, they assembled the Avengers of hip hop at halftime last night. What was your take, and what is your review of the halftime show?
Well, see, I thought Kendrick Bourne was going to be the Niners receiver, but it was Kendrick Lamar. I got confused. I liked it in the sense that the set was fantastic. So and the concept was really good. The music didn't blow me away because I thought it was it was aimed more at a non-hip hop audience. So from that point of view, it would have sold that pretty well as an accessible form of music to people who wouldn't have considered it that way. But I think the big thing for me is that because in LA it's daytime when this game is being played, because you're starting in, you know, in prime time, East Coast time. So in LA it's still sunshine. There wasn't that energy that you expect in a Super Bowl halftime show where it's dark and the stadium is dark to begin with. And then it lights up and you get all of the razzmatazz and all that kind of stuff that goes on around the act. You didn't have that. So it was kind of like watching the Oscars when everybody's arriving for this gala, you know, kind of dinner kind of thing, but it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And you think, why are you wearing an evening gown at 4 o'clock in the afternoon? It was that kind of a vibe to it. So I don't think it was as exciting as it might have been. But you do remember that back in 2019 when Colin Kaepernick was being ostracized by the NFL, they made a big deal of hiring Jay-Z to kind of improve their racial awareness and stuff like that. And so 3 years later, what we get is a great halftime show, but I haven't seen much else on the racial front from the NFL.
Yeah, maybe it's a handy fig leaf. Mike, good stuff. Thanks a million for joining us. Cheers.
Oh, thanks.
It's Mike Carlson giving us his review of the Super Bowl last night.
OTB AM with Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.